out of the gate this afternoon, we'll talk a little Boston sports as we welcome in Michael Hurley of WBZ CBS Boston. Hello, Michael.
Hello, how are you? It's quite the, I mean, that's a lot of pressure to put on me to start off that kind of show, so I'll do my best.
You're a table setter. I mean, you're a guy who gets on base, high percentage, has a good eye, finds a way to make things happen and get things started appropriately.
Yeah, not a lot of power, but consistency. That's kind of my thing.
It's the name of the game. Speaking of that, in our little Downtown Madness competition, where historically you have been a giant killer and you've already knocked off a couple of folks along the way, and now in our superb 64, you're up against the voice of the Patriots, Bob Soucy.
Yeah, listen, everyone says Bob's this great guy, you know, very polite. Listen, Bob, just a garb. I can't even pretend to say something mean about Bob, so, you know, that's quite the honor. Bob Soucy, everyone loves Bob.
He is a stone-cold killer. That facade of being a nice guy, we can all see through that.
Yeah, I mean, come on, Bob.
But on to more important things, and so much going on this week. Let's start with the Patriots. Who's their quarterback next year?
You know, it's fun. It's a fun time. The Friday, I believe it was Friday, right when the news broke that the Niners were trading up, it got a lot fun. And I'm not a Jimmy Garoppolo believer. I don't think he's a great quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback. But just the whole circus and spectacle of it all, like, we get all this extra juice to our day knowing that, you know, the Patriots might have this Jimmy G reunion lining up for them and falling into their laps. I think it's going to happen, to be honest with you. I just think, I mean, there's no way the 49ers keep him. There's no way Garoppolo wants to stay there after they draft, you know, their quarterback of the future. There's no way San Francisco wants to pay him $26 million. I think this whole thing has a restructure, trade, get back to New England, sign like a 5-year deal, spread out the cap hit. Like, it just makes too much sense for it all to happen. So my guess is Jimmy G, even though a few things need to happen before then.
Is there any scenario where the Patriots could trade up and grab somebody in the draft?
I don't think so, because as much as it feels like, you know, Bill Belichick is going to be 69 years old and went super aggressive in this free agency period, it kind of feels like a new era where it's not so much the long term, it's more, you know, load up, so to speak. I still can't see him ever sending a package similar to the one that the 49ers just sent to get the number 3 pick with this year's first round and then two more first round picks and a third round to cap it all off. It's sort of like you know someone in your life who just can't, you know, spend the money on something. You know, let's say you need a new fence and it's $6,000, and you know someone that's just like, I'll build it myself. They can't bring themselves to do it. I think Bill is very much a build the fence himself guy in that regard. So I can't see him ever giving up such draft capital for a guy that, you know, the way, and we know this from their philosophy in the draft, is a guy at 4 or 5, is he definitely going to be better than a guy at 15 or 24? They kind of see it as it's all a crapshoot. So I can't ever imagine they move up to draft their guy in the top 5.
That spending spree the Patriots went on was unlike anything we've seen in years. As you look at it now with a little bit of hindsight, who do you think of all the new players they've acquired will be the biggest impact player?
I like Jonnu Smith. I think he's a guy that is super versatile. I mean, he is a tight end. He can block and he can, you know, line up on the end of the line like a tight end, but he can just do a lot more than that. There's a clip that went around after the signing of him lining up in the backfield and taking a handoff and busting free on like a 65-yard run. His speed, his power, and just his commitment and his attitude, like, he is a perfect Bill Belichick-type player to come in and just be an impact player. And that was just so lacking for 2 years. I mean, I don't know what went on in Bill Belichick's office and between his ears the past couple years to just think you could exist without NFL caliber tight ends. It's been such a black hole on the roster that to have two guys come in, I think Hunter Henry's very good too, but to me Smith is a guy that is going to really, you know, key in to someone like Josh McDaniel's creativity and just be an impact player right out of the gate.
What's the biggest downside to moving to a 17 game regular season?
I think it's going to be the toll. You watch these games and toward the end of the year, you know, it's December, it's cold. You start to see a lot of these, you know, loose tissue injury. You know, that's not the right word. I misspoke. I don't know words. I'm not a doctor. You see a lot of, you know, quadriceps, hamstrings, hips, hip flexors, core injuries. You know, the human body can only take so much pain. And while adding one more game might not be significant, there will be, across the league, just like there is every week, injuries in those games. So that's one more game, one more week of action where there are injuries for 32 NFL teams. So to me, that's the type of thing that can change seasons. You know, I mean, the look at the Chiefs losing their offensive linemen throughout the year. Some team is going to lose their starting left tackle next year, whether that's in game 8 or 17. You know, you can't really describe it, but I mean, that is the added risk. To me, I don't love it personally. I think it's unnecessary more than anything. I mean, I'll watch. I like watching football. I'm not going to cry about it. But it just seems like the NFL really pushes the limits with how much people want. I mean, Thursday Night Football was kind of a disaster for the first few years, and now it's just sort of part of the rotation, and we look forward to it. So I guess in that sense, that's what they're going for. But to me, I'm still just thinking about all the bodies that will go down across the league in that extra week.
We're talking with Michael Hurley here on Downtown. Bruins continuing to play well, but what does Bruce Cassidy have to do other than drop to his knees and say, "Don Sweeney, will you please find some scoring for me?"
I don't know. And he is at his wit's end. It's pretty clear just watching him, seeing him, hearing the clips from practice of imploring his players to go to certain places to score goals. It's frustrating. I mean, and when you can't score against the Devils, you're doing something wrong. And it's not to say that the Devils are the Devils, you know, that is in their DNA. They're not going to give up goals even when they're at the worst team in the league. But that you look up and down that roster, and it's just, you should never be in the situation. You've been with them now, what, 3 times this year. So it needs to, the dam needs to burst, or however, whatever cliche you want to use, but it's bad, and I don't think Don Sweeney can go out and just fix it. I don't think it's that simple, because we've seen how much he's paid for guys over the years. You know, I mean, I think back a few years ago to the Marcus Johansson costing them, I believe, a second rounder. I didn't do my trade deadline research before this, so I apologize, but I'm pretty sure that was a second rounder. And, you know, that's not exactly a guy who can, you know, turn your scoring woes around completely. So I don't think there is an answer out there. I think it's just going to have to be, they're going to have to be a grinded out team where they need to get lucky with goals from the likes of Carson Coleman and, you know, Brandon Carlo's back. Maybe he'll put some more top shelf bombs, which apparently he can pull out of his hat from time to time. But yeah, it's not great.
I worry too that this defense has had to work so hard, because you feel like if we give up more than one goal, we're not going to have a shot here. That at some point, that's going to take its toll on them as they get deeper into the season, and especially when you've got the schedule the way it is, where you're playing everybody so many times.
The schedule being what it is there, and they don't have consecutive days off for the rest of the year. So you factor that in with just the grind of the season, and you throw in that Tuukka Rask. We don't know when he'll be back. Dan Vladar has looked really good in his 2 outings, but, you know, with any young player, there's going to be dips in that play once, you know, other teams know what to expect from them. They can exploit some weaknesses and all that. So definitely not ideal. I don't think they're going to slip out of the playoffs just because the Flyers are the Flyers, but in terms of building a team that can compete come playoff time, when you're grinding tooth and nail against Buffalo, nothing feels good. I think that's the best way to look at it.
I want to be optimistic about this Red Sox season. Now, like, I know they're not going to be great, but I want to believe they'll be interesting and entertaining, and maybe even win more than they lose. But I'm not sure it's a good sign when you release your pitching rotation for the first week, and one of the slots is to be announced.
Yeah, real shades of 2020 there. Not great. You'd like to think maybe they're, you know, optimistic on Eduardo Rodriguez or whatever it may be, but it's just certainly, you know, if you're not fully stocked on day one, it's hard to really get too far ahead. So I think in terms of optimistic outlooks for this team, it's like 500. You know, it's mediocre, which they weren't even close to being last year. I was writing about them last week, and I said, you know, they won on opening day last year, Nady Evaldi, you know, 6 innings, 1 run or something like that, good outing. They were 1-0. It was the only time they were above 500 the entire year. So I think what you're hoping for in 2021 is slight improvement over that. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. I don't think they're going to be anywhere near the top of the league. But hopefully, I think if you want to be entertained, they are good enough to win as much as they lose. So it's very, very meager goals getting back to just relevance, because they really have been irrelevant for a full year. And going back to the end of 2019, you know, they really followed up their championship year with a dud. It was very boring and painful to sit through the 2019 year, to the point where last year I've never seen the Red Sox matter less in this city in my life than last year. So they've got to climb back and sort of grasp that. And, you know, maybe with the Bruins not poised to make a deep run, and maybe with the Celtics looking like a first-round exit, you know, the door's opening. It's just a matter of whether they can seize it. I'm not super confident that, you know, Red Sox fever will be back, but let's see if they can get back to you know, basic relevancy.
Michael Hurley, WBZ, CBS Boston. Michael, appreciate it. As always, we wish you good luck dispatching with Bob Soucy, and we'll catch up with you again very soon.
Yeah, here's the thing about Bob Soucy. That voice you hear on the radio, not real. He's a real pipsqueak in real life. He does that deep touchdown. It's just all fake. He uses a modulator to boost it. It's sad. It's really pathetic. So it's like performance enhancing for play-by-play. So, you know, do with that information what you will. You didn't hear it from me.
That's the kind of thing we're looking for. Thank you, Michael. Be well. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye now. Michael Hurley with us here on Downtown.